Ladies and gents, boys and girls, here we are. It's the boys, episode 3 and 4, coming at you in a big way. Sam, you are here as always, and so glad to have you here. Let's just start jumping right in and start going at, wow, what a weird title for an episode, which is Over the Hill with the Swords of 1,000 Men.
I haven't had much success figuring out what these titles always mean.
I am baffled. I really am baffled. And I think it's either a complete herring or I'm just not smart enough. I don't know which.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure. I'm not always one that looks at the titles of shows before watching them, but I, you know, obviously for this, I've written them down, and it's one of those things where I've watched it already. I wrote it down and I go, I'm not exactly sure what that was about. Maybe I'll figure it out later.
Okay. So another question, since we're not going to solve that one, I'm not the biggest Billy Joel fan. What's the connection? Come on.
I you know what? It's almost like I was just asking my girlfriend this the other day. I was like, don't a lot of people consider Billy Joel to be kind of a joke? Like, I don't mind him, but I always feel like he's, you know, it's kind of like making a Creed joke or a Smash Mouth joke or something, that he's kind of one of those artists that just get shit on. And he's like this huge plot point for all these different episodes. Like, he calls Starlight, you know, saying that you're my second act, and, you know, and then later in the fourth episode, when they're having their little drive, that they, you know, they're jamming out together to Billy Joel. I'm just like, wow, this guy is, he should write the showrunner and be like, thank you, I'm seeing an uptick in sales on Apple Music, so thanks for reinvigorating my career here, because it's like he's constantly being brought up in the show.
Yeah, I cannot figure it out. And we start the episode out with Huey is on his phone listening to Billy Joel. They're now on a yacht. They've got Kimiko's brother, and they are 3 miles out and waiting for Butcher's connection to take in her brother.
Mm-hmm. And I love that opening scene, because, you know, he's watching that video and Butcher comes over to apologize in that oh so Butcher way of like,
yeah,
I'm only saying I'm sorry because that's technically what I'm supposed to do here. Are we good? And Huey rips up and hits him, and when he follows through, and Butcher just kind of looks annoyed at him. I was kind of like having a moment of self-realization. It's like, that's what I think my punches would land like. Like, everybody wants to think they would punch like Captain America, but you probably punch more like Huey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and in Butcher's way, you know, he's like, well, okay, you know, good cunt. You know, you're fine. We're all settled up.
Yeah, and Butcher wasn't even really ready to beat his ass until Huey went back at him again. And he was just like, I gave you one, buddy. Like, go with God.
Well, and this starts to line up with, I think, these two episodes especially. We start to delve into Mother's Milk a little bit more, and that he is seeing that Huey is at a breaking point. Now, it would seem like Huey's always been in a breaking point, but there's something is not quite right. Of course, everything seems to be even better because now Compound V has been basically announced to the public. And so Huey's actually feeling pretty good about himself.
Yeah, but then even then, Butcher can't give him any credit, but I kind of feel like that's why this show works, is because Butcher was actually right. He's like, great, I'm glad we got this news out there. It's part of the battle, but we're in the middle of our own battle right now. We got a guy out in the middle of the ocean. We're trying to keep a low profile. Shit can go sideways, which it does. You know, so it's kind of one of those things where you look at him and you're like, God, Butcher is such a dick. But at the same time, he's actually right, and he's just trying to be cautious and get the job done. That's really all he's about, is accomplishing his mission.
Yeah, Butcher's like a great pragmatist, except when he's not.
Yeah, and I think that this episode shows that it's like, hey, look, there are times where we need that hard ass, we need that 1,000-yard stare, looking at our goal, delivering us there. But at the same time, I think that at the end of the episode, it's great when Mother's Milk is like, he's your canary in the coal mine, dude. If you let the canary die, the rest of the miners are dead. So, you need this guy to kind of keep you grounded, because if you just are a monster until you find your wife, then she's going to see this unrelenting monster that showed up to save her and be like, this isn't the man I married. So he's trying to save his humanity a little bit in that moment. And it works.
Oh my goodness. You just hit something. This is where serendipity meets a little bit of note taking. So in my notes are very sparse. And they basically are there just to only, I try not to take too dense of a notes because I just don't want to regurgitate. But there's a part in the Billy Joel song at the beginning, which is, I believe the song is actually called You're Only Human.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not very up on Billy's catalog. Okay,
I did a little bit of research. I did a little bit of research.
I did less.
So that song is called You're Only Human, not Second Wind like I thought it was initially. But that starts to play into that idea of like, If you act like a monster and behave like one, chances are you're going to reach a point of no return. And Huey is that point of no return for all of them.
Yeah, and I think Huey's kind of – that's why I enjoy Huey as kind of my my avatar to the show, because I feel like he's always the one that when he sees something horrific, he's kind of how you should respond to that. You drive a boat into a whale and you find yourself literally in the belly of a whale. You might need a minute to to get up and be like, well, that was awful. And not everybody can just jump out and just say diabolical.
It's not a hang 10 moment.
Yeah.
We do get some, human type moments, perhaps with Homelander and his son on the roof of their house.
Yeah, I feel like this is where I was having trouble last week. I know I was talking about Homelander and his kid, and it was hard not to mention these scenes because, you see him, you finally see that he's right. He does have the same powers as Homelander, and for the first person we've ever seen actually push Homelander and do anything to him. I thought that mm-hmm. was interesting that he was strong enough to push him. And part of it is he just probably wasn't ready for it, but, that was kind of huge. And then just seeing how he's getting more and more invested, he's not getting bored like they said that he would. He's thinking like, this is my chance to have somebody on my level that I can actually relate to, as opposed to all these peons below me that don't even deserve my time of day.
Yeah. Again, he pushes him off the roof to, I guess, activate his powers, and it doesn't work at first, but then only when Homelander starts to confront Rachel. Is that right? Rebecca.
Rebecca, you got it.
Rebecca, okay. Yeah. And that, sparks the fire in him to actually kind of, I can't help but think, and I think we kind of talked about this. If not, let's talk about it one more time, which is this the quote unquote final solution to deal with the Homelander problem? Was he developed basically as the anti-Homelander should Homelander go off the rails?
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking, because you see, I guess we can kind of bleed into episode 4 here. We're not going in order, but you kind of see when he's ready to break Rebecca out, how she almost looks at it as this like responsibility. She's like, no, I cannot leave him in the hands of these monsters to raise Homelander 2.0. And then we've got two of them. Like, you see how much they've changed. I mean, you would think that, obviously she's so excited to see him. She drives back there to have sex with him under the bridge. And, she couldn't, obviously they're bonding. They're so happy. They're talking about escaping. But at the end of the day, you can tell she's changed, because it's like she did have a kid. And even though she had a kid from the horrific circumstances, it's still her child and she loves him. And I think that's one of those things that Butcher was like, I was not prepared for this reaction whatsoever, but it makes perfect sense for a character to be like, I've been living with this child for 10 years, raising it, trying to make it be a good person, trying to make him be the hero we all want Homelander to be. And, you know, I feel like she's kind of heavy as the head that wears the crown. Like, she knows how big that responsibility is and isn't ready to just walk away and unleash that on the world.
Yeah, well, like we'd like all mothers to be. I do have a strange, like, setting question, and maybe you can answer it, because in episode 4, I'm going to be honest, I got a little bit, the stuff with Butcher and Rebecca got a really long, and I started to drift a little sideways. But is where she lives behind the wall?
Yeah, that's the assumption I got, was that they are locked into some kind of Truman Show-esque neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that, because, like, she heard her talking about how she doesn't get to follow the news anymore. And she mentioned different things that she missed. I can't remember the other examples, but the one that she specifically mentioned was reading the news. And I was like,
okay,
man, they don't even deliver her a newspaper. Like,
yeah.
What is this town made of? Like, is there at least a little league team she can go watch, or do they get cable? Like, you know, they're sitting around speaking Spanish on breakfast on Mondays or whatever. So it's kind of like, what is she literally just like, I've got a master class pass and I'm just trying to teach this kid everything and not go crazy. And occasionally I sneak off to this bridge and have a cigarette. Like, is that really her life? That's rough.
And when she, cause I think from episode 2, I thought she was trying to get in somewhere. And then when Butcher, you know, climbs the wall, I was like, okay, this is not anything what I thought it was. Like, literally it is kind of like a separate facility, where I would assume he's probably not the only one, or maybe what they decided to do was, like, you know, parents who want their kids to be soups now have to be in this kind of isolation.
Wow. So, cause it's like, you know what, and you're seeing this with, like, the news come out about Compound V. There's a point where Queen Maeve's father is on there. They Dutch my little girl, and you see he's like a Subway employee or a Burger King or something.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of one of those things where maybe they looked at it and they go like, oh, we've got all these like alcoholic heroes who are all a mess because all we did was dose these kids and just assume that their parents would teach them to be good people. Now we have this process where they all live together, they go to school together, they, you know, they think they're in a normal neighborhood, but they're not, kind of thing. And, you know, yeah, maybe that's the way they do it now. But that's the thing, is that the more we unpeel the onion that is Vought, the more I'm like, oh, they're up to a ton of evil shit. Like, it's not just a couple accidents, hoopsie daisies here. Like, they've got a lot of irons in the fire of bad stuff that we don't know about yet. Like, I feel like it's kind of ripe for however the showrunners want to go with this, because, you know, I kind of, they've peeled back things where, like, oh, I did not think about that. And so I think there's even more that they could bring to the table here.
Yeah. And there seems to be, you know, it, not so much in episode 3, but in episode 4, we get into this idea. Homelander is been out of circulation. He doesn't realize what's happened with Compound V. And so Mr. Edgar is kind of dealing with the fallout and ramifications therein. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me is this idea where Homelander almost makes this, I can't tell if it's so hard to tell when he is actually sincere and, you know, when he's putting on a face sometimes. And it seems like he talks about, you know, this is my real family being, excuse me, the Seven. And that we need to rally together and stop this nonsense from going on. Mm-hmm. When he just came back from his, you know, quote, real family, but I can't tell if he's actually sincere with Maeve, considering the events that happen in 4. And, you know, he basically fires A-Train, and Maeve is kind of, well, number one, she's outed as a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And then it's almost done as a way to angle her and put pressure on her to stay within the seven. Like, nothing's going to happen to her as long as you're good with us.
Yeah, he obviously likes having leverage over people in the seven. And that's the thing, is I think he's a little bit telling the truth that he's like, hey, we have to pull together. But I think it's just kind of because he's telling them what they need to hear. And I think he does need the seven. I think it's important to him. I think if he just wanted to be his own guy doing his own thing, he would do that. But he obviously has this very, you know, want and need to be loved and approved by everybody. I actually wondered if when they were showing him both watching the news, tapping his toe and clicking the channels and clicking through the memes, if it wasn't making fun of some other powerful person in the news that likes to watch the news and comment on it a lot. You know? Yeah. I was watching that going, oh, huh. I wonder if that's supposed to be that guy. But, you know, kind of going back to what you're saying, like, even I remember I mentioned this last week, was that I don't know when to believe what he's saying because he's so good at delivering his lines. When yeah. he's firing A-Train, he literally goes in the platitudes of, hey, listen, this is really hard for me and we're still going to be friends. And then he drops like two other things and he goes, and yada, yada, all the other stuff, whatever. And he walks out and I'm like, oh man, I did it again. I started to buy the bullshit. And then he just turns out that he's not even trying to hide that he's not sad about this. He's like, hey, you used to be the fastest man alive. Now you're not top 20. We can't have a slow guy with a heart problem in the seven. Bye. You know?
So. And he's still not willing. He extends the most fragile string to the deep. Like, yes, look, you're on the right path to getting back in the seven, but just because you did this doesn't mean you're on that path. And Stormfront calls out the deep and basically saying, like, did you join Scientology? Whatever it's actually called. I don't care.
Yeah, the Church of the Collective. I'm kind of surprised they were scared to just call it Scientology. Like, I wonder, were they worried
why? They would have gotten litigated against up and down.
Oh, really? You think
sure.
Oh, this was a budgetary decision.
Oh, yeah. This is called Amazon didn't want to get dragged.
Ah, you know, I almost wonder if those weren't reshot just because they're like, ooh, we can't say that.
Yeah.
Or maybe in the script approval process, they probably were like, can you just call it something else? Well, you can even have the e-meters, but you just can't call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought that was a good scene because it showed, of course, I love how he's always so distraught over the death of a fish or an animal. And the Homelander's so just like, who's Lucy? God dang it. Where are the terrorists? Let's get this going. And it's almost like, I think that the deep actually must have some value because you see that Homelander liked using him last season. Like, he was the one that found Translucent's box and he was the one that found the laser marks on the plane in the first episode. So obviously having some sort of C person in the seven is somewhat important because they still haven't filled that seventh spot. You know, they filled Translucent's spot with Stormfront. But, you know, they got rid of the deep and it's just six people there. So I keep wondering, like, are they going to introduce somebody else or are they actually, does he have a chance to get his way back in? So it seems like they're pushing it that way, especially with the bride interviews in the fourth episode, which I didn't quite understand what those were at first. I was thinking maybe that those were moms of children that had superpowers at first, but then I realized towards the end when he found his true love that they wouldn't let him marry that. Oh, they're Tom Cruise interviewing wives for him. I see what's happening.
Yeah. I'm still a little confused on that. And I'm not sure, did that get wrapped up? It was so jarring that I don't feel like I got a complete denouement over that.
Yeah, I think they kind of ended it with just him being like, I want the pleasure girl. And they said, no, you're taking the girl who talked about the Roman couple that...
That's right.
Okay. You know, you're picking her. And he goes, no. And they're like, look, this is about getting you back in the seven. This isn't about you being happy, basically. Yeah. And so that was kind of all they had of him in the fourth episode, I think.
Which when you think about it, like, for, you know, all the things that I've read and seen about Scientology, it's important for them to get a person in a high position. It builds credibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very old school thing of, like, you know, you're supposed to be married with kids at a certain age, and this makes you look like a stable person, and it'll help your career. And I don't feel like that's as important now, but I feel like back in the day, and especially maybe in a very conservative church setting, it probably still is.
Yeah. And getting to the near the end of, I guess, episode three, we have the big battle, essentially, you know, Homelanders like Starlight kill Huey, and, you know, Miko's brother just tears down the ground, throws Homelander into a big hole. So Stormfront becomes the save of the day in this terrorist thing. I was really shocked after watching it twice, and it really does take twice to see the things that she does, at least from my eyes. She's chasing them down through an apartment complex. A person seems to be killed inside of the apartment, and it doesn't make sense at first, but she sees that person gets killed, so go ahead and kill the rest of the group. Now, that family happens to be Black, which doesn't initially strike me until the very end, when Stormfront kills Mimiko's brother and says something about your yellow skin, a racial epithet to basically, I think where we were going all along, that something's not right with her, and she may be older than we know, and she may actually be one of the original Vought Nazi super people.
You know, I hadn't thought about that last part, but yeah, that I had to rewatch it too, because the first time I watched it, you know, you're seeing all this action. I thought maybe she killed the guy in the apartment on accident.
I think she
did. And then I look and I see, I don't know that she did. I think that she just saw the guy and just zapped him. And then when the other two people, then I think at that point she goes, oh, well, these witnesses are obviously gone.
Yeah, he got blown like through the wall into the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. She sees that. And if you look again, she's kind of looking, and it's kind of like, and then she takes a look at who else is in the room. And it's kind of like, well, like you're already dead. These are witnesses. You can die too. It seems like that. But then as you understand her a little bit more, I started to make connections, whether they're valid or not. I think they are. Mm-hmm. I believe it's anybody who's not white is going to get killed.
Yeah. And you know what? And you, when she's chasing up the stairs, she throws that guy out the window. He's a Black person.
There
as
you
well.
Go.
And
there
there's almost go. Part of me, if she doesn't at that point go, oh, this is just like, this is just some, poor neighborhood with a bunch of minorities in it. I can tear this building apart and nobody will care. Like, and I think that's part of why she just goes ballistic there and blows up like three floors of the apartment building, because she's trying to get those people. At the same time, I think she knows very much like Homelander, like how this will play. Like, oh, if I catch this guy and two people die, it's a story. But if I catch this guy and 60 people die, it's a national tragedy. Right. And so I thought this was very similar to Homelander's Flight 93 moment from season one.
Absolutely.
In that she took it to another level. Homelander was just like, we can't save anybody, because then they'll be around to say that we didn't save anybody. And whereas hers was, I'm going to go ahead and just murder all these people to make my collar look more important. And then you get to the top. I think she called him like a yellow bastard or something
like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just like, and I saw that somebody tweeted the actress and was like, was that a hard line to deliver? And she's like, yeah, it was. But, you know, I hope you know that, you know, I thought it was disgusting, but my character doesn't. And those are two different things. And it's like, yeah, right. Totally. So, yeah. And it just like finding out in episode four that she might be Liberty. Like I was very curious to see what this Liberty person was. And that threw me for a loop, because that's not where I thought any of this was going. So, bravo to them. But I was not looking to find out that, oh, she might be in her 70s and still looks young and is just rebranded. And, you know, especially when she's telling Homelander, I don't think you realize what I think of you, that you're the perfect one of us. And it's like,
yes,
he's this white blonde haired, blue eyed.
And what did she say from the very start? Like, holy shit, your eyes are blue.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Like, I, you know, and it's funny because that's one thing I do know. Like, I don't know a ton about the comics, but when I know what they, when they cast this person, I looked it up and it was supposed to be a very racist superhero. And so I see that they're very kind of, it's like they're kind of trying to show you how people are racist without being outwardly so. They're trying to show you all those little social, like, cues or things that people say, that it's like, it's not, oh, I hate this race, but it's, you know, it's the coded way of saying it, or it's the coded, you know, it's the coded way of saying, like, hey, these white people are, they're the shit, right? You know, well, so.
And the point in fact, I have a hard time, maybe you didn't, but when Stormfront is kind of giving her let's stir the public up speech, I actually could, it was hard for me to tell, and I'd love this about it, that you couldn't tell if she was pushing the hard left-wing agenda and stirring people up, or the right-wing agenda stirring people up. I mean, it was just, it obviously was getting them all revved up, but I couldn't put a definable pin on it and say, oh, that's where she's at. And that's, like, again, when we talk about complexity of characters and complexity of villains, it's like, you know, I have to base things around the things that I see and the things that I know. And I can't tell what side she's actually on.
Yeah. You know, and the thing that I took from that speech is that she stole Homelander's line. Like, at least two or three times in the first season, he does that. No. Hey, you guys are the real heroes. Like, when he goes and tries to find that terrorist, he does it to them. He does it, like, a couple different times. And then she goes, like, the people behind me, you guys are the hero. And I was like, oh, she's stealing Homelander's stuff. So, like, I don't know. I think Homelander's seeing her as a threat, and she's coming in being like, no, I'm not a threat. I want you to join me, and let's, like, rule the Seven together, and we can rewrite the history of everything and make it a better world. Like, you're all about being the best, you know, that you're better than everybody else. Let's get rid of these people that aren't as good. You know, I think that that's kind of where she's going with all this.
And, well, and she's
doing it very subtly, though. Cause, like, even like when she's talking to the director of the movie, when they have that terrible pitch meeting, and he's pitching all the dialogue for the movie, she goes, what does she say? She said something like, the changes she's thinking are more global. And I kind of, like, that struck with me, where I was like, huh, that's an interesting turn of phrase for somebody here. So, like, I feel like they're doing a good job of really downplaying where she's coming from, but, like, also hanging a lot of lanterns, being like, hey, listen to the way she's talking, everybody.
Well, and she says to Homelander at the end, it's not about fans. You can have a, you know, millions of fans, but I have, like, 5 million, what was it? An army of 5 million. Like, mine are upset.
Oh, yeah.
Mine
she
are
said,
angry.
Yeah, she said, you have fans, I have soldiers. And that really reminded me of some of the rhetoric that's going around now. Of people
all
riled up and bringing guns to places, of being like, yeah, there's a difference between people protesting and people showing up with weapons. And there's certain people that know the right language to say to get those people with the weapons riled up. And it's amazing how much this show, for something that was probably obviously filmed before the pandemic,
it was in 2019. Yeah.
Yeah. That how much it's really hitting home with things that are even going on now.
Well, and we started out episode 4 with them, with Starlight, Huey, and MM going to North Carolina to find Liberty, which I thought was kind of interesting. Now, I'm not really overly thrilled about the depiction of the South. I think it's a little, as somebody who has lived in that area specifically, I thought it was a little bit stereotypical, and kind of it threw things into a weird kind of light. But I understood, and I think it got across the language of what, you know, don't abort your baby. It could be a super, even though
Wow, I didn't notice that. That's interesting because I didn't even it didn't even register for me. But I'm a lifetime California kid, so
yeah. So I mean, there was just like there, you know, there was signage everywhere, and like
I did see the Homelander with the flag, the Rebel flag. You know that was one thing that stuck out. But yeah, I didn't notice the billboards like that, and I guess I just didn't really notice other than the lady they talked to anybody being stereotypical or anything.
Yeah, like that. That whole idea counters what I think is going on, which is you may think that your kid can be a super, but in all actuality, you have to be in this facility to have super kids. I'm guessing that. We don't know that for sure. So, but it's very curious to me.
Yeah, we definitely haven't figured out how they're picking these kids because,
right?
If it was just a random luck of the draw, eventually somebody would talk. I mean, you can't have. You know, what do they say that if there's a conspiracy and two people know about it, the only way to make sure it's a secret is to kill one of them?
Right. You never do business with three people.
Yeah. Especially like someone like Queen Maeve's dad, where it's like he signs, you know, he gets some money and goes out and gambles it. You don't think he ever called Vought and was like, hey, what if I told CNN that you gave my little baby drugs kind of thing?
Yeah. I really liked this episode really kind of expanded out Mother's Milk a lot through the eyes of Starlight, which I thought was really interesting. And when they come upon the woman, and I don't remember her name, you know, Huey tries to talk to her about Liberty and what she might know. And at that point, it really doesn't work because you, for whatever reason, there is, you know, something, a cultural thing where Milk needs to come up and actually talk to her and say, look, this is me. Here's my background. This is what my dad did, and he died doing it. And that's why we need this information.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it helped that they were, you know, she's obviously somebody that grew up in a racist place that watched her brother basically mm-hmm. executed mm-hmm. by a racist superhero. So a white guy knocking on her door asking questions probably scares her a little bit more than when Milk comes in and actually explains, hey, look, we're good people trying to fight the bad people. I can vouch for, you know, yep. this dorky Huey over here. Yep. He's a good person. We've all been hurt by these people. We need to give some hurt back. And so, you know, I think it makes sense that he had to step in. You know, as great as Huey is, he is not perfect at everything.
No.
So, yeah, no, I thought that was a good scene. And yeah, I just wasn't ready for it because I was like, oh, wait, is she Liberty? Like, I just wasn't, you know, I even went
well,
back.
Well, that's what I thought.
I even went back and looked at the magazine cover to see if it looked like Aya Cash on there or not. And it just looked like a very generic, you know, woman's lips with, you couldn't really see her face or anything under the hood. So, you know, they did a good job of kind of keeping that a secret.
I'm trying to think of what sitcom she was in.
Aya Cash?
Yes.
You're the worst. On FX. She might have been in something else, but I know that's what she's kind of known
for. Wait, the woman that they're interviewing?
Oh, no. I was talking about Stormfront.
So, okay.
No. I don't know. Yeah, she did look a little familiar, but I wouldn't be able to tell you what.
It was the sitcom with, I want to say the guy's name was Dwayne Wayne, but I'm not sure if that's correct. He had the sunglasses that would flip up, the round sunglasses. Something World.
Oh.
Real World. No.
No. I know what you're talking about, though.
A Different World?
Oh, well.
I think it was. I think I'm going to use my brain on this. All right. Fuck it. I'm going to Google real quick.
Yeah. This might be a good edit point here, just because that's driving me crazy, too.
No, no edits. This can't edit it. What did I say? The Real World? No.
No, it's Different and World.
A Different World. I'm positive. It's that. It's,
yeah, I remember because I remember the round sunglasses too. And
yes,
like blue and yellow and squiggly kind of t-shirt. Like
yes,
I never watched that show, but I remember seeing ads for it as a kid.
Yep. I watched.
You know what? Before we go too far, I do want to bring up a couple of things from episode 3 before we get into more of this actress here.
Sure.
I always thought a good line here was when A-Train was telling Starlight, you don't fuck with the money. And I don't think he was necessarily only talking about, you know, losing his payday. I think if anybody that's ever watched The Wire knows that when you follow the money, you don't know where it's going to go and you don't know who's going to come knocking. And I thought that was kind of his like warning, like, hey, look at you're in deep water here. Like this isn't, you're not just messing with our livelihood. Now he complains about like the only people that say money doesn't matter is people that grew up with it.
Right.
But at the same time, I think he's also kind of telling her, like, hey, look at, once you start messing up with, you know, you're messing with the people on 99. Once you start messing with the people on 87, that's when that's the real scary people. You think we're scary, check them out. So I just thought that was kind of something. And then also that they mentioned that Vogelbaum, another Wire veteran, the guy that the scientist from season one that Homelander goes to go visit, they mentioned that he was unavailable for comment since his accident where he was paralyzed. So I was like, oh, so when Homelander went back to go talk to him again, he didn't just have a little chat with him. He broke his back. Okay.
Yeah. Again, like this is part one of those things where I had to think about it, but was A-Train not, I swear in season one, he was using Compound V at least to keep his powers or amplify them for his race against what's his face.
Yeah. Well, I got the feeling that the way I interpreted it, I went back and watched season one, so I'm not 100% sure on this, but the way I kind of interpreted it was that he was delivering it to the terrorists for Homelander. And then him and Popclaw got into trying it themselves, and it probably boosted up his speed. And then he got addicted for a while, got off it, and then since he wasn't using it anymore, his powers began to diminish, and now we're even seeing where it's starting to have an effect on his heart. So that's kind of the feeling I got from it, was that he used it just for fun, and then it made him faster, and then he had to keep using it, or, you know, using it to be able to beat Shockwave or whatever in the big race. And then now that he's not, he's seeing the effects it's had on his body, that it's, you know, you can't, there's probably like a certain amount of stuff of that stuff you can expose yourself to. And if you just abuse it, it's probably like his heart's probably been beating a million miles a minute for his whole life. And now he's got a heart of an old man or something like that. So
yeah. That's
kind of the feeling I was getting from it, is that it's kind of like somebody that just has abused any kind of drug for too long and now they have an issue. It's kind of, you know, that's kind of where he is.
Okay. That makes that. Everything that you're saying, I can line up with completely. I'm okay with not knowing. It was more of just a like, man, I feel like I'm missing something, and I wasn't sure how I was missing it.
Oh, you know, it was one other good little Stormfront thing I noticed, is when she makes fun of the Deep for getting into the Scientology. He goes, easy on the religious persecution, new girl.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. And that she actually knew about it was a whole nother thing. It's like, and it starts to add a little bit more credibility to the fact that she might be older than she appears, that, you know, she would have seen this, you know, basically bubble up from the ground up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
I thought it was horrific. You know, there's some gory and horrific acts that are in the series. There are some that strike me more than others, but her brother's face, basically all bones smashed, was, you know, at first it was like, oof, that's just kind of like some weird effects. And I was just like, yeah, it's because all of his, you know, his entire facial structure is broken. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was watching Faces of Death for half a second.
Yeah, and plus how when she comes out of the car, he's still breathing a little
bit. Yeah, I mean,
and it's like, and because that's kind of how it would happen, is like if you had a horrific injury like that, yeah, you're going to die from it, but it's not going to be instantaneous. Like, oh, you fall asleep. You're going to sit there barely surviving, just wondering what just happened.
There was also some interesting, speaking of guys who create the horrific, our big famous guy, Black Noir, he had some interesting side things happen where more he just reacts to things. One is when
I know what you're gonna say.
when the Vought stuff comes down, and he's looking on his phone. It looks as though, you know, he's sitting on the ground. It looks like he's kind of laughing at the whole situation.
Okay, well, that's not the one I noticed. I'm more when the
whale,
when the deep is going like Lucy. He looks over it and puts his hand over his heart, and I was like, this guy's doing some great you know, body work here, because he does a really good job of conveying emotions. And you know, for considering we've never heard him, we've never seen his face, he does a good job of just with very little screen time of throwing stuff out there. And I was very intrigued about how he's tracking down Butcher by the end of episode 4, that he's figured out that Butcher has visited the compound and he sat there, the same analyst that Homelander kind of tortured last year to find the deep. He's there sitting over her shoulder watching her try and find, you know, Billy Butcher. And at the end, he sees that, you know, they got him on the security camera visiting Rebecca. So obviously he's hot on the trail too. And so I keep wondering, I feel like there's something there with Black Noir. I wonder if this season we'll get to know a little bit more about him. I know a little bit about his origin from the comics, but I haven't read him. I've only Googled stuff. So, and I feel like they stay enough away from the comics that I don't know if that's the route they're going to go. So I'm very interested to see what they're going to do with him this season.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're seeing some rearrangement of certain elements. And again, you know, look, if you haven't Googled anything about Black Noir, just don't. Just to let you know, like it's going to be a problem for you if you do. I think you're going to miss the forest for the trees.
Yeah, and I think that I don't necessarily think they're going to go that same route, because I've read other people in the Seven story and they're very different as well. So I don't, but you never know. I feel like this is a show where plot really moves forward. And so you'd kind of, and they do keep me guessing about what's going to happen next. I mean, I didn't, you know, like I said, I didn't see Stormfront blowing up that building, and I didn't see her being 75 years old either. So, and I feel like some of these things are things that you'd find out at the end of a season in other shows. This is episode by episode. We're going through it. So I like that the show isn't trying to hold back. They're looking at it and be like, hey, you know what? We think we got about 50 episodes in us. So, and even like this one, it ended up being about an hour and 5 minutes. I like that they'll go a little bit longer, a little bit shorter, because they just want to put what's going to be in the episode in there and not cut things for stupid time reasons like ads or whatever.
Yeah. Speaking of episodes, Sam, guess what episode this is on the TV podcast by The Incomparable?
I feel like you mentioned it to me and I forgot. So I'll find out with the rest of the audience.
I was going to say at the top of the show, and honestly, I didn't want to, I wanted to get right down into it, but this is the 666th episode. We are right now on the Devil's episode.
Ooh, metal.
That's why I said no one else wanted to touch this. And I was like, no one put up any episodes. I got this one. It's all said and done. I figure if we're going to make it happen, we're going to fucking make it happen on 666.
Perfect. I mean, I saw New Mutants last week, and so I got to see Magic throwing around the Soul Sword. So I feel like I'm right at home right now. So
there we go. But before we cap off, I think it is important to talk about like that big, really big, almost too big of a part of the episode where Billy and Rebecca are talking. Mm-hmm. I feel like that took up an immense amount of this particular episode. And I'm just wondering, thoughts, allegations, things that maybe shouldn't have been there?
Well, I don't know about things that shouldn't have been. I think that it was a good kind of, because we really haven't seen them together other than like two scenes in the first season. So to me, it kind of established like, hey, these two love the shit out of each other.
Yep.
She's so happy to see him. You know, he wasn't expecting her until the next morning, and she drove back in the middle of the night just to, you know, have a quick hookup and a smoke of the cigarette on the back of the car. And, you know,
I think that was a great little piece of cinema. that the intimacy of that cigarette back and forth.
Yeah. And just little things like, he's like, it took you forever to quit. You had a million of those patches. And she's like, hey, how about that beard? And he goes, oh, you fancy it. And like, and it just, I really felt like, oh, this is a married couple and they are seeing each other for the first time and just falling right back into their old ways. And then, you know, just again, kind of seeing the stark contrast of when the next day he's expecting her to show up with the kid and she doesn't. And he's like, you see where they've changed. You know, he's just focused on getting her out of there. Yeah, yeah. And she's done the math in her head. And it was like, you know, even if we get away, eventually he's going to like let Vought have this kid so that we get away. Mm-hmm. And he's not necessarily going to call Vought and be like, I got him at this diner here, pick him up in the bathroom. But if it push comes to shove, he will sacrifice him for her and she wouldn't do the same. So I feel like that kind of shows, you know, like you said, they've been apart for 10 years. So
yeah. And time kind of stopped for him and he became the monster. Now he's kind of joining the human race again, but things haven't stood still for her. And I think that that's that. Unfortunately, I don't know if it works. I don't know if the relationship is still there as much as they want it to be.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of those things where it's like, hey, look, I wish that you could just move in here and we could raise this kid together, but that's not going to happen. And I've made this deal to keep you safe. And so, you know, I've already kind of established, you know, like, and she really does hurt. Like she does. Well, that answers one of our questions from last week, was that she no doubt says he raped me. Yeah. And she says, he raped me, I came to you. When I found out I was pregnant, I went to Vought, not you. And so it kind of shows where it's like, look, I didn't make this. I wasn't stolen here. I made the decision to come here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've made my bed. You need to go because, unfortunately, you know, bringing you was not part of the deal and I can't make that happen. So, especially with Homelander knowing about it now. So, I think that that's one of those things where you see, like, he doesn't realize that, like, oh, she's not a maiden in a castle somewhere to save. She made a decision to go to that castle and be there and is going to continue making that decision, which is, you know, it's just interesting. It's giving everybody a little bit more agency. It's not just like, she's not just a person to be saved. She's like we talked about, this is a real character.
Yeah. Isn't it nice to have some real characters once in a while? Mm-hmm. I don't even know where episode 5 will take off. I honestly don't have a clue where we go from here.
Yeah, and there's one thing from the trailers that I'm very interested in because I've seen a lot of promos for the show, and there's a I don't want to mention which scene it is if people haven't seen it, because it does seem like a little bit of a spoiler, and I'm very interested because I feel like a lot of the promo stuff they've shown so far have been from these first 3 or 4 episodes. That's how I knew he was going to push that kid off the roof, because I remember that being in the trailer.
Okay.
So there's like literally one other thing from the trailer that I'm like, ooh, I want to see what happens. But I wouldn't be surprised if it happens the next week. But yeah, I'm kind of not sure where to go. You know, I feel like I could use some more Frenchie right now. We've gotten a lot of the mother's milk and Frenchie's been kind of been, you know, messed up in the corner, all drunk and everything. He saved Kamiko from kind of suicide by Stormfront,
yeah,
you know, in this episode.
Death, so I'm glad. Stormfront.
It's kind of one of those suicide by cops. You know, it's like if she had attacked him there's nothing. She was going to kill her right in front of everybody. No doubt about it. So, and then I, you know, seeing him, I kind of forgot what a drug enthusiast he was. How like in the first couple episodes of last season,
he was giving
Huey different pills. Like here's this one to sleep. Here's one to stay awake. Like I forgot that he has like this, he's kind of a chemist in his spare time. So maybe hopefully we see a little bit more of him and Kamiko, because I feel like they got kind of a short end of the stick in this longer episode.
Yeah, I think there's something coming definitely with those two.
And then were you at all surprised by the Stillwell reappearance? I know we haven't talked about that.
Oh, geez,
yet.
We didn't even cover that. We got to cover it.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. Stillwell is in episode 4.
Yeah. I kind of saw where it was going because I just went, hey, man, he lasered her eyes out. Like, as soon as I did it, I was like, he's not making that doppelganger guy pretend to be her, is it? That second scene they're in, he changes it. I'm like, oh, my God, he is. He's such a creep.
Yeah. I mean, there's almost a sympathy I have for Homelander, that he is so broken in almost to the point of infantile. Like he has all this power, but he is, you know, you bring up the whole breast milk thing and whatnot, but there's something he doesn't know how to have a healthy relationship. It's beyond him.
Well, and you know, it's funny you mentioned the breast milk. I wrote down in episode three, he drinks some regular milk. And it was before Rebecca had you know, kind of quashed our was she raped or not thing. And I just wrote down, he drinks milk like a rapist.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the most disgusting gift that you can send to somebody on the internet. And I've seen it multiple times. I've pushed it a couple times. And it's just, there's something just so sad about it and yet so sinister at the same time.
Yeah, no, he's just, he has a very nuanced way of showing how crazy Homelander is. It's not just bug eyes and shouting. It's, you know, in the way he does these little things that you just, even just like we talked about the way he talks to his son about not being alone again. You could tell he has this deep sense of loneliness. And, yeah, you know, Stillwell was maybe the one person he thought was kind of on his side, but then he realized, oh, she lied to me like every one of these other handlers does, these other stupid heroes. So I really have no one. And since then, he's just obviously trying to replace it. And, you know, he tried doing it with Doppelganger and, you know, despite just hearing whatever he wanted to hear, that even that wasn't enough. So he's, you know, he's obviously becoming more and more unhinged as the season goes on. I think that maybe that's probably, he's going to break in some way in the next few episodes, or either that or Stormfront's going to pull him to the side and be like, hey, look, it, I don't think you're hearing me. I'm not talking about social media strategy. Let's think global.
Yeah, I feel like he is going to get corrupted by Stormfront, but there's going to be a salvation point for him. He will have to die, but there's going to be a salvage point. I think
it seems
the way I feel about it.
Yeah, it seems weird to say that he's going to be corrupted by Stormfront when he's already a pretty evil, you know, guy. It's not like he's lack for.
But he's only evil because he's been corrupted. Absolutely, because he has the most power.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, and obviously she's a little bit more powerful than she's letting on. And if she's, you know, looks like she's 30 and she's actually two or three times that age.
And just remember this, I'm Homelander. I do what the fuck I want to do.
That was one of my favorite lines from season
one. Of course it is. So with that, Sam, let's mark this down. 3 and 4 are in the books, and let's just see what happens next week.
I'm glad that we're all caught up now and we don't have to play the, I've only seen episode 1 and 2 and not talk about 3. I'm ready to just go week to week. And
that would be a relief. We can open up and break down a full episode in the same time. That will be nice.
I wonder if we're going to get a Church of the Collective sea wedding for the Deep next week.
That's well, what something, something is on the horizon.
Something to look forward to.
Yes, absolutely. All right, with that, ladies and gents, we'll see you next time. Bye.